There was also an interesting debate around the fear of job loss. They also had economists on stage from MIT and Stanford, and they said, well, it's early stage. We only have the first research now going, but interestingly, it showed that actually AI creates more jobs than it takes away.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. My name is Florian Miedlmeier. I'm an analyst with Bark. And in case you're wondering why there is a new voice, let me tell you why. So today we're flipping the script. Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of Bark, will be the guest of our podcast. And I will have some exciting questions. So welcome to your podcast, Carsten.
Florian, thank you. And thanks for taking over the role of the interviewer. And this is an experiment, so we are looking forward how it goes.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So for this special episode, we took one topic that happened just a few days back, and we found out that you've been to Davos recently. That's a super exciting experience, certainly. But I'm wondering, how is actually the setting to get started? Because like everyone has been to conferences and trade fairs and so on, but Davos is different, right?
Absolutely. So it was my first time. And actually, I went because several colleagues and people mentioned that it's worthwhile a visit if you're interested in AI. And that was my primary topic. So Davos obviously is an economic forum. But lately, and especially this year, obviously, is also very political. And this year with Trump coming, by the way, with the largest delegation ever. So he brought 300 people with him, lots of ministers, heads of whatever. So it has definitely a political dimension. I think there were 65 heads of states. I mean, where do you get this collection of political people? But obviously, there's also the economic side to it. And I think what's interesting is that, first of all, it's completely crazy. I mean, there are so many people in this Alpine village, which is not too small there, to be fair. And it has a large conference event facilities and so on. So it's not like a very small village, but still, it's an Alpine village. And so you have like several tens of thousands of people, literally, flooding into that village. So first of all, it's a buzzing place. There are lots of people. Then the interesting thing is the actual WEF conference is one part of the whole event, but there are about 800 side events. So other things happening alongside this main event. And this can be dinners, receptions, but there are also lots of conference types events. So there are media companies or other types of companies that set up events like several also interesting conference type events that I visited. They were around AI. So that makes it actually special and interesting. But it's definitely a unique place.
Mm-hmm. I feel like in the last years, we already saw in the media that this World Economic Forum is super important for the world, of course. And this year, there was even maybe a little bit more attention, maybe for the political reasons, maybe also for AI, which is obviously a great discussion there. How do you feel that also on site? Do you feel that there is like a lot of the world looking at that place at the moment?
I mean, this year was special with Trump coming, the Greenland debate going on. So for sure, there was a lot of attention this year on the event, but also in previous events. So I think it's really the idea is to be a place for dialogue. And I think that's what actually takes place there. Yeah? So also from my personal experience, it's very easy to get in touch with other people. So it's like a high-speed networking event, actually. Yeah, so wherever we are, if you wait in line for an event or wherever you sit down or have a drink or whatever, immediately you start to talk with people around you. And I also have to say it's a special crowd. It's a lot of interesting people. So whoever makes the way to Davos, which is, by the way, not so easy to get up there into the mountains, has some reason to be there. And I think the percentage, let's put it that way, percentage of, let's say, interesting people with interesting backgrounds is for sure higher than at other events.
Maybe talking about the mixture, I met a lot of Americans. So actually there was a debate also in the local Swiss media around whether this event is too American dominated. They were thinking about the number of people, obviously, from a Swiss perspective, being the host of this, but also from a conference perspective, I read these debates. Yeah, since Larry Fink took over from Klaus Schwab, yeah, the leadership of the event, there was definitely some debate around whether the whole agenda was too American-dominated. Yeah. I cannot really judge that. From an AI perspective, I can say that there is this promenade. So that's like one of the main roads that also leads to this conference center. And it's an interesting site, actually, because lots of houses on this promenade were like redecorated. So obviously they were emptied out. Then corporates rented them. And so they created spaces for meetings or for presentations and so on. That definitely was American dominated. So more or less most larger tech companies were present with quite large houses. Next to that, there were a few media companies, but also many Americans. So there was like the Wall Street Journal, CNBC, and others. So also had a little bit this impression. And then there were country houses. Yeah? For example, India had a big presence, Brazil, Ukraine was there, and others. Yeah? So that's more or less the setup. But yes, many Americans there, then also many Swiss that took the advantage of the local event, and many Germans I met. I don't know whether that's the bubble I'm in, but that for me were the, let's say, where I met most people from. And it's also many vendors, like technology vendors, consultants. I met a lot of consultants, but also startup founders. I met quite a few. Also on the investor side, there were quite a few present. So it was maybe a good mix of people, many on the vendor side, which for us as a market analyst is totally fine, yeah? To see, okay, what's happening in the market, what vendors are there and so on. So interesting crowd for sure.
Interesting, very good. So we now figured out how the setting looked like, more or less. I would say it's time to dive into some contents he saw there. And I mean, we all saw a lot on the media what happened there. One item I wanted to pick out is like all that discussion around world models and artificial general intelligence. What's your take on that? And what did you learn from the top-notch speakers also that have been there?
Right. So maybe in general, AI definitely was the most important non-political topic, to say it this way. In the whole reporting about the event, obviously it was not too present because of all the political things going on. But also in the general economic debates, it was definitely one of the dominating topics. So that basically set the scene a little bit. And then there were several of these side events that actually had a lot of content around the topic. And most notably, there was the AI House, the Davos AI House. This is put on by a German company, Mirantix, plus partners. So ETH Zurich is part of it and many others. So they put on a program for all 5 days from morning to evening. And another notable conference I found very interesting was the Imagination Action Conference. And that's put on by a media company that basically features many of the MIT and Stanford people. So they are carrying the whole program. It's a series, so it's not only Davos, but also on the East Coast and West Coast of the U.S. And what was really interesting about it, that they really brought in top-notch speakers. So really the luminaries of the AI space were present, and that made it really a unique possibility, yeah, to hear them talk. There's a little but. It's mostly set up in a panel discussion style or interview style. So you cannot expect any deep presentations or deep insights into new topics, but it's really more impulses. It's really more statements. But then I found it also interesting to hear a little bit what people are thinking about, what their opinions are about things. So I think that made the whole place a bit special, but also interesting. Coming back to your question, world models. So Jan de Kun was there. pretty famous, obviously, in the space. The audience also celebrated him. He basically presented his idea. Yeah, his the starting statement is that language, so what we do with Gen AI mostly, is not able to represent the world in its complexity. So that's the starting point. And then he had this this great saying. So he said, okay, if you try to do agentic AI with LLMs, you're set for disaster. That was his quote. And that obviously caught attention then. Said, okay. And what he mentioned, like what he's developing right now, it's a world model. And he says, well, the new types of models have to be able to cope with sensor data from all types of sensors. Yeah? I mean, our eyes, our ears, they're all, you could also describe them as sensors. So Bockham, he says, like, sensor data is continuous. It's messy. So models have to be able to tackle that and cope with that, and also to understand spatial relationships and also to understand physics. Yeah, so that the laws of physics have to apply, and if not, then something's odd. You know? So, and the models have to understand that this is like off. And so that was actually, I think, quite an interesting input and statement there. And overall, I have to say, I was expecting a little bit, especially when I saw all the speakers, to have that there will be way more talk about AGI and when will we be there and how will it look like, but actually not. Yeah, it was a little bit from time to time, but it was really deliberately toned down. And what dominated were really application questions. Yeah, so like, what's next? How can we improve LLMs? What about the smaller models, the industry-specific models? Yeah, how can we actually bring agents into production? How can we scale them? So really more the practical applications of AI, and I found that really good. Yeah, that was not like this more philosophical debate. Yeah, and so it was pretty, let's say, maybe hands-on or pretty applicable to business problems.
Very good, because that directly tackles our next questions, which I have in mind. So in our research, we can see that companies out there are going into agentic AI pretty quickly, to be fair. So adoption rates are really high already, and the outlook into 2026 is pretty optimistic, I would say, because agentic AI could be something like including AI for your own business model in a way. I'm just wondering, there is a discussion out there on productivity. Does agentic AI or other use cases like, let's say, coding for AI really impact the productivity of the engineers, for example, that are using coding tools, or the productivity of people in business domains, I would say.
Yeah, I found that this topic was discussed actually and quite interestingly from different viewpoints. Just let me mention a few that I can remember. So one was the topic of coding, and it was actually phrased as the killer application of Gen AI, which I found in this clarity quite notable. And then there was Andrew Ng, which many of us know, like founder of Coursera and other things. So also a luminary in the AI space. And he mentioned that in his own company now, the developer to product management or product manager ratio has decreased from 10 to 1. So 10 developers are more or less doing what a product manager or designer definitely defines. Has now gone down to 2-to-1 or even 1-to-1. Yeah, so very, very significant reduction, because the coders, the developers are now so productive with Gen AI that they can massively see the increase of productivity. So I thought that was also measurable, very interesting. Also, there were some discussions around really now value of AI and impact of AI. I think agentic AI plays a big role in that. And there was also the theme of several talks and discussions, that there is an issue with value generation and measurable business benefits, that they have to be often to become clearer in organizations, and that agents, because they are focused on processes, on process improvement, on automation, can really make a difference here and also make the value more tangible. There was also an interesting debate around the fear of job loss. They also had economists on stage from MIT and Stanford, and they said, well, it's early stage. We only have the first research now going, but interestingly, it showed that actually AI creates more jobs than it takes away, that it automates. Now, let's see. It's early research. It's maybe a bit biased. I don't know. I'm not saying that it is, but in that type of conference, maybe that was also what people wanted to hear.
Sure.
But it's interesting to see, because I'm, by the way, I'm also not decided on this topic. Yeah, because in the history, you could see that technical driven automation typically did create more jobs and more wealth. Yeah, but obviously you have the transition time, and there will be jobs will be lost, and that was also openly be discussed there. But I think that was also an interesting input from the event.
Yeah, I guess one answer to that is definitely that also skill profiles are changing. That's, you can see that in surveys from different institutes out there.
Yeah.
You mentioned the AI house quite sometimes when you described how the scenery looks like in Davos. Do you want to describe what is like the vibe in there, or how do you get in there actually, and what is it about?
Right. So all these larger events have their own web presences, so you can see the program and then you can register or apply. And the thing is, my tip would be do that early if you plan to go, because it's extremely hard to grab a spot because the houses are quite small. Yeah. So it's, you can imagine it's maybe downstairs was maybe a sports shop or something, but small. It's not big. And then the upstairs is more like, it looks more like offices or living rooms. So very tiny spaces. So the first impression is very crowded. So then, but that creates also a bit of a special atmosphere. Yeah. So it's very close together. There's not a big distance to the speakers. Yeah? So it's also good to get into touch and into interaction overall. Yeah. Yeah, but booking early, I think, is a good idea. And then the whole logistics, maybe it's also worthwhile mentioning. Yeah, my tip would be go by train if you can, because parking is a nightmare, obviously. It's just a valley and the village. For example, I stayed overnight in Chur, which is about 1.5 hours by train, but that's very well manageable. And as usual, the further you are away, the more reasonable the prices get.
I would say let's switch one last time the topic. You said AI was the most relevant non-policy politics topic. Mm-hmm. I would say there are definitely policy aspects to AI. If you're talking about energy or, which is super important to Europe, the topic of digital sovereignty. I definitely heard there were some discussions there, but not that big as far as I perceived in the media. But what was your impression on-site? Did you hear some discussions?
On-site. Actually, both topics were discussed quite heavily. So let's start with the energy topic. I found quite interesting, Eric Schmidt was there, former Google CEO, and he said in a panel discussion that he, or wherever this comes from, estimates the additional power demand to 80 gigawatts just to run AI further, or to run the new models. And we have to consider that an average nuclear power plant produces like 1 to 1.5. It was mentioned as definitely a big issue and a big problem and something that even might limit the technical advancement, because we simply don't have enough energy to do everything we want to. But then I think it was Jan LeCun or someone else had this interesting thought that I never really thought about this in this way. He said, well, but we are in an age where we can now transform energy into intelligence. How cool is that? So interesting thought. So, but it was definitely discussed, and what can we do about it? But there was no real solution, obviously. No? So just that we need more energy but more energy efficient models and approaches obviously become more and more important because no one knows today where all this energy should come from. So that was the energy side. But then European digital sovereignty is a big topic. But I think also the feeling on site, obviously, where that this got another push. I mean, we had the situation that tariffs were used not only from an economic rationale, but now also as a threat, as a political weapon in a way. And I think this woke up even more people that said, okay, something's going on here. And the dependency on US-based hyperscalers is so high that we have to come to a new risk assessment as European companies, and that we have to think about, first of all, risk and things that we thought were unthinkable before, but now we have to take them into account. And also, how do we react and how can we basically be more resilient as companies? Yeah? And that starts a whole debate around digital sovereignty. My impression also on site was that this whole debate got a push. It's definitely a big topic.
And I mean, we even did research on that as well. I think there is also something in a pipeline, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. 1 year ago, we did a research on data sovereignty, a survey, and we will redo that to see what changed and also have more questions around that. So in a few weeks, we'll start another research on data sovereignty. And I'm really looking forward to those results because, as I said, the debate didn't stop over the course of the last year, but now has been actually been fueled again.
Very good. So I think one last question to end our conversation today should be definitely, will you go again?
That's the question I get most often. So I don't think it's a must attend event. So if you're AI, you have to go there because for that, it was too crowded, too hard to get into many interesting talks or spaces. And it was lacking the depth in often. So it's really more statements. But if that's the thing you expect, then I think it's good. So for me, I'm actually not 100% decided yet. For me, I will actually wait for the program of next year. So I want to see, for example, will this Imagination Action Conference, will it be back? Because that was really a highlight. Yeah, what will be the program look like at AI House? Will there maybe be more forums where we see interesting speakers and interesting topics around AI? So I will really make it dependent on the program, what will be on the agenda, and then I can decide. So it's not a yes, not a no. And I think that's fair to the event.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the conversation. It was super interesting to listen to that. For me, it's always a bit of being curious. It's a mix of professional interest and looking into documentary, how things are working on the world stage. That's super interesting, just as a human.
Absolutely.
And thanks for the time.
Florian, thanks to you. I think that was a new format. And also to our listeners and viewers, we'd like to get your feedback because we are thinking about putting on a series like that. Yeah? So having a discussion around certain topics and to also have different types of episodes in this podcast. And let's see how that goes. But I'm looking forward to more of these types of episodes, Florian.
Me too.